Fosakis, Good News Planner, speaking to Al Marino. Hi, Al. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Paul?
Okay, good. You know, we were just talking about the times we're living in here. Al's a he's an author. He lives out there in the L.A. area, and he's a hero cop, is what I've been told. And I can see in what your work you're doing, and you just gave me some thought about these times that we're living in right now. So today's April 8th, 2020. What's your thought on where we are at this moment?
Well, I go way back. I'm 74 years old, and I've experienced just, wars, riots. I was a Marine in at the height of the war in 1968 as a rifleman and a radio operator. Then I went on to the LAPD, and I've seen more death than most men, but not as much as some. But I can tell you that I've never experienced anything that is anywhere near this kind of anomaly here that is almost unprecedented, for the exception of, the 1917 Spanish influenza. But, this is modern times here, and it is just truly the strangest time I've ever experienced in my life.
Do you think that's because of the way we're handling this scenario? Why do you think that is?
Well, it's just we expect terrorism, and we're kind of almost accustomed to it, unfortunately, today. And, we have all sorts of other, kind of sociological problems that we experience here in the United States. But this is truly something that is just unprecedented in modern times. There is no playbook for it, and it's all shooting from the hip. However, I think that America is doing what it's known to do, and it's rising to the challenge and the fight. And I think we're doing spectacular.
Okay, I agree with you, and we're doing the best we can under these scenarios. It is definitely not an easy scenario on what to do here and how to go about it. I was just looking for something through the years, centuries. It's almost kind of a crazy thing, but in 1720 there was a plague. 1820 there was cholera. 1920-ish, right? 1980 was the Spanish flu. And 2020 is the coronavirus. I don't know.
Correct.
some unique things. Either it doesn't really matter though about that, because we're into now, right? Everybody's living as of now, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with things. Tell me about your book and about in town here, 7 o'clock. We're clapping for the public service people, and I know you've written a wonderful book. Tell me about it.
Well, the book is L.A.'s Last Street Cop, and I've been trying to get my story told for the four decades. I got on the department after fighting 9 erroneous disqualifications or medical disqualifications. Back when I got on the job in the early to mid-70s, they weren't hiring a whole lot of people of color or women at the time. Anyhow, after overcoming 9 erroneous disqualifications, I just rocketed up the department. I was just born to be a cop. And within a 5.5-year juncture, I had accumulated over 71 commendations, which is a bit unprecedented. And that was at the 5.5-year juncture, and half of them were for disarming gang members, with guns. And the department—that's when I finally got onto it. I'm sorry, I got a little ahead of myself. But the department in the late '70s started their first ever gang suppression unit called Operation Central Bureau Crash, because of the just unabated wholesale slaughter that was going on in East LA and South Central Los Angeles. So they handpicked 40 super cops from the entire department, and I was one of the cops to get picked. And we were doing a hell of a job. However, the math wasn't right. Los Angeles County is known as the gang capital of the world, and the statistics bear that out. So we had 40 super cops versus 550 gangs with anywhere from 50 to 75,000 gang members. It depends on who you, you know, what stats you look at. But it was absolutely, it was insane. Our unit would handle anywhere from 1 to 3 shootings per night. 5 wasn't unusual. One night, I remember we handled 9 separate shootings. Now, that's every day in Central Bureau, which was part of East Los Angeles and South Central Los Angeles. So the statistics are going crazy, and our unit commander was catching hell from City Hall, from the chief's office, because the statistics are going nuts. It wasn't good for business. It wasn't good for property value. The lieutenant got sick of catching hell, so he started cooking the books. In other words, underreporting the true crime stats that were occurring. Well, it got so disgusting that half the unit just left. And, you know, you never leave a specialized unit because you don't want to go back to the armpits of the job, which is working a black and white. But it got that bad. I wasn't going to leave because I was crushing it. I was leading my unit in felony arrest and gun seizures and doing that without using lethal force. And it's in the radio reports and what have you, because it was pretty unusual to do what I did. When I think back about it now, I just can't sleep at night. So at one point, I got fed up with this malfeasance, and I did the cervical thing. I went to our commanding officer of the entire bureau and just laid out what had been going on for years. And I was shocked because 2 of the 4 supervisors in our unit, sergeants, actually backed up my story. So the commander, the word was out that there was going to be a board of inquiry and heads were going to roll. I had the department went absolutely postal. They were so incredibly, mad at me for doing that. And this is before they had the whistleblower, laws. I mean, this was back some time ago. Anyhow, just at that time, I was working homicide, and I got beeped up on a drive-by murder where one of the Avenue's gang members cut this 60-year-old kid in half with a sawed-off shotgun. And we worked, this new guy that had came into the unit that was a replacement was kind of a yes man, to put it mildly. And I had never worked with him. So anyhow, we were working the crime scene, and we worked 18 straight hours. There were 2 shooters and a driver from the Avenue's. And so we worked 18 straight hours on it, got a search warrant, and got the main shooter, the one with a sawed-off shotgun. When we took him into custody, I told this new guy that came into the unit that we really didn't have to interview him because for the first time, there was actually a witness that was willing to testify. And that was that never happened. So we knew who did it. So I said, well, let's book this murderer. We'll go home, get some sleep, and then we'll go back for the other 2. And this new guy that came into the unit insisted that he outranked me. So we went in back there and talked to him. He wanted me to play the good guy, bad guy routine, just like you see on TV, where you grab the suspect and you push him and you scream at him. And then you walk out of the room like you were going to beat him up or something. And then the detective in the room is supposed to look at the suspect and say, you really pissed off this homicide detective, and you're going to see 30 years unless you cooperate. Well, that didn't happen. He came out of the room and said, Marino, you physically assaulted that arrestee under color of authority, and I'm going to the old man with it. He knew that the lieutenant and I were at war, and there was a detective 3 spot coming up, so that would put him in good stead to get it. I didn't really, it really didn't bother me that much. I mean, for something like that, the bail schedule or penalty is a really strong, admonishment. And if the department really wanted to get medieval on you, you possibly could even get a day suspension. Yeah, but I could handle that. However, a couple weeks later, I went on a water skiing trip to the Colorado River with six friends, their girlfriends and wives. And on the second night, we went up to one of these clubs there, which is just right on the river on our boat. And we went into this club, and unbeknownst to us, it was a hangout for the Aryan Brotherhood. So we immediately said, go ahead.
No, that's not good. That's a
No. So when we went in there, we sauced it out, and we, some people had already gotten a drink, so we were going to leave after they, they had their drinks. And just as we were leaving the bar, this one major player, they called him, I found out later that they called him Crazy Jerry. Guy was 6'3", 260 pounds, had just been paroled from prison for cutting his wife's fingers off with an axe. Guy had a 9-page rap sheet for murder, attempted murder. I mean, this guy was just like the worst nightmare you'd ever want to see. So as we were exiting the bar, I was tailing Charlie to make sure that all my friends were okay. And he grabs me, so the fight was on. And it was a hell of a bar fight. At one point, I was able to get around him, get him into a bar arm, brought him down. He fell on top of me, crushed a couple of my ribs, and I was trying to render him unconscious so I could get the hell out of there and wouldn't have the rest of those white supremacists and prison gang members, to kill me. So at one point, some folks broke up the altercation, and then we ran out of the bar. Well, actually, my group ran all different ways, but I ran towards the boat. And just as I did that, somebody's screaming, "He's got a gun." So the ex-con had gone to his car and got a double-barrel shotgun and then came at us with a shotgun. So as he came around the bar, he leveled the shotgun at us. And, the few of us that were there by the boat jumped in the water because there was no time to get out of the skip there. So when I got out of the water, one of the females that we were with came running up to me. She was frantic, and she said that he had gotten one of the female LAPD members, took her hostage. So I, this was the day before cell phones, and I just knew that he was going to rape her, and then he was just going to blow her up. So there was a trailer park there, and I was knocking on these doors. Finally, somebody let me in, and I used the phone to put an officer needs help call out, told him real, what we had. But I was thinking, we're in the middle of the desert there, and God only knows how long it's going to be there before one of the units respond. Meantime, my sister officer, I knew she was dead or going to be killed. So I asked the individual if he had any firearms in the house, and he gave me a 30-30 rifle with 6 rounds. Now, I didn't want to go back, but I had to. So I go back to the bus.
Let me ask you a question now. Okay, because you don't want to tell the whole story because you want him to read the book, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to stop you there, all right? Now,
okay.
I'm your friend. I want them to read your book. Seems like an interesting time style.
No, that sounds good to me. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you 2 questions, and obviously, you've lived a heroic life. You've gone into some scenarios where people were not kind and loving and hopeful and helpful for each other and for us, right? And you're a good guy. You took on a position that was who you are. How long were you in the force? Just answer some questions for me. How long were you in the force?
Just about 7 years.
Okay. And how long were you were in the service?
I was in the Marine Corps for 2 years and served a tour in Vietnam.
Okay. And so what did you do out of college, or out of, if you went to college? What did you do then? What was your life?
Well, when I left college, that's when I first applied to the Los Angeles Department in September of 1970. And it took me 5 years to get on the department. For 5 years, I fought 9 erroneous disqualifications.
Because you're my age. I'm 70, all right? I was in Los Angeles at 72 to 75. I managed Television City and Beverly and Fairfax. So, system managed. To be honest with you, when I came out there in 72, and I went over to this place called Watts, and I said to my wife at the time, "This is Watts? This is like a nice neighborhood." The difference is, you know, you don't have the pollution. You don't have the winters. So everything looks nice still. The palm trees look beautiful. The streets look nice. Now, I do know you have had a lot of concern. But so that's from your side. I mean, that's like a long time ago. That's 50 years ago. So during all this time, what have you been up to? So you got
well,
in 5 years?
Well, after I was... After I was fired, I became a private investigator and started my company, Global Investigations and VIP Security Services.
And
principally,
that's
what I've been doing.
Okay. All right. Well, and in a job like that, you help people do what? What does a private investigator do?
Well, my specialty is working unsolved crimes, unlike most of the other PI agencies that go around chasing unfaithful, you know, wives or whatever. I work unsolved crimes, and you can see it on my webpage, globalinvestigations.com, where I've worked.
What is your webpage?
It's globalinvestigations.com.
Okay, and that's.
But the one that's really important right now is laststreetcop.com. That's the book's webpage that has one of the chapters in it that will basically.
What's the webpage there? What is it?
It's laststreetcop.com.
Okay, good. You're doing good things. Let me ask you one last question. I got to run back here because we're working on medical supplies for the country. So,
okay.
I wanted to get to talk to you because I know people like you are dedicated to justice and freedom. And we're all about that. We made a movie called Woodstock Forever, Peace, Love, and Hope. We start off with Richie Havens singing Freedom. And to a big degree,
nice.
We have freedom in this country, right? And we do our Peace Day events, so we're into peace and things like that. And I'm a believer in law. And I'm a believer in police. And I'm a believer in all this public service because, unfortunately, you know, one... confused, I'll call it, though, apple in the bushel can be hurt too many people, unfortunately. So
that's correct.
And I believe also that the bushel, everybody else is kind, loving, caring, wonderful people. So that's my perspective. So with that in mind, I ask many people for them, and you would even know it, have a good sense of this because you put your life on the line in your life for others. What is peace for you, Al Marino? What's peace for you?
Well, peace for me is that perhaps one day we'll drop all this advocacy and see each other as just Americans, not Afro-Americans, not Hispanic Americans, not white Americans, just Americans. That's what I want.
All right, Al, thanks a lot for sharing good news with us. I appreciate it. Best of luck. The name of the book is...
LA's Last Street Cop.
And the website is?
LastStreetCop.com.
All right, good man. All right, best of luck with it and sharing it. Good job. I appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul, for having me on. Bye-bye.
All righty, take care.